Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. Today is Wednesday, July 15th. I'm your host, Richard Benulli, and today we have returning guest Charles Hugh Smith. Charles is author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including Investing in Revolution, which is part of a trilogy including The Mythology of Progress and Ultra-Processed Life. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. It's my pleasure to be here on your program yet again. And also, you've done so much great work on AI that I'm really excited to talk about it with you.
Yeah, thank you. And you too, you've written extensively with a number of blog posts on your blog and your Substack, Charles Hugh Smith. And it's fascinating. You've taken several perspectives on AI. So love to hear what you have to say. So today, if you want to give a briefing overview of what you'd like to cover on AI.
Yeah, I was thinking of kind of three topics. One is the business model that's being pursued in the US with huge expensive data centers and selling tokens. And is that a business model that's actually viable if we take away the subsidies? In other words, the subsidies from government, or in the case of like companies like Google, their ad revenues and sales of data are subsidizing their AI, right? People aren't actually having to pay for what they're using. So if we strip out the subsidies and people have to actually pay the real costs of the AI model that's being developed in the US, is it survivable as a business? And of course, there's a lot of skepticism there, because the revenues right now are minuscule compared to the CapEx and operating expenses. So there's that topic. And then the topic that you've delved into is it really going to reduce costs versus a human? Or is that actually another kind of chimera or illusion? And that the actual reality is, in many cases, the human is more efficient and more productive than AI and more cost effective. And so then that brings up the topic of hardware versus software, which you've written about extensively. And then the third topic we could talk about is, where is AI going? And that's unknown, but there's pathways that are sort of already visible.
Great. And so where would you like to begin in terms of the overall cost approaches? There's significant differences between the way that the U.S. And the Western world is approaching this versus the way that China, the Eastern world, if you will, is approaching it in terms of the infrastructure and overall approach, hardware versus software.
Yeah, and let's. I think that's a great topic, and you've done a lot of work on that. I would just kind of contextualize it in this way. We like to think that we're all innovative, right? And innovation drives technology, and technology drives progress. But in actual fact, it's actually scarcity that drives real innovation. And so in cases where people don't have access to Wall Street's, trillion-dollar leverage and so on, then they have to get a lot smarter about pursuing AI, because they either don't want to invest those kind of mega fortunes in it, or they don't have the means to do so. So then they have to innovate with software. And so that's an issue I'd like you to discuss. My recent blog post was on just stating the obvious. If we remove the subsidies, AI is unaffordable. In other words, if people using Grok and Gemini and so on actually had to pay the cost, that would be very expensive, because these things are hugely costly. And so if they're only getting excited about it because it's free, but it's not really free. It's just being subsidized. And so the companies like OpenAI that don't have $100 billion worth of revenue streams like Meta and Google, well, they're using investor cash and to subsidize their users. And then they're burning through that. And when it's gone, it's gone. So And eventually, even Meta and Google are going to have to start charging people some percentage of this enormous expense. So if you take away the subsidies, it's simply not affordable. I don't see consumers spending huge amounts of money just to ask AI, you know, what to have for breakfast or whatever. And so and corporations are burning through their money using AI, and they're all cutting back and replacing the AI that they're no longer can afford with humans again. Those are two data points that we can look at and go, this is not a business model that's working.
Yeah, absolutely. It's being subsidized, especially with the U.S. approach. It's much more expensive. Just if you can see my screen coming up here, just having a few points to show. Some of these are from China Business Daily podcast, where you can see on the left side here the very high cost of the hardware-based approach in the U.S. versus the right-hand side, the very low-cost software approach by China. One big lesson in computer science that you learn in university is software can emulate hardware. So that's the approach that China has taken, much lower cost. So those costs are more reflective in the pricing model currently. And right now, I think there's a fact that open models are showing that the Chinese is 90% as good, but at 10% of the price, so 10 times cheaper. And some other data points that you could look at in terms of token costs, U.S. approach is much higher than the China approach. And now that's being reflected in the financial markets, all this billions, hundreds of billions being sloshed around with borrowing and lending and sort of circular financing is now being borne out in the financial markets as the price of the shares go lower. Your thoughts on that, Charles?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Richard. Is in terms of the financing of AI, it almost can be described as kind of a con job, if you will. Like, we're being told this is all going to be fabulous and it's going to make everybody trillions, but the reality is, all we really see is cash burn, and once the subsidies are removed, it becomes unaffordable at the current price. And there's no way to reduce that price in terms of hardware, as you say, that they consume a huge amount of electricity. They require a lot of replacement. In other words, all these chips are obsolete in 2 or 3 years. And so you're spending this immense fortune on chips that'll be obsolete in a very short period of time. So Where is all that money where's the revenue stream going to come, and where are the profits going to come from to support this? So that seems like it's almost like a con job. Like, we're being told something that's not realistic, and it's more or less delusional.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we go from here?
Yeah, that's the big question. And if you think that, is it really going to be lower cost for an AI robot relative to a human or not, is the big question. We've done some analysis on that. And if you think of the human brain as only needing roughly 12 watts, that's a very small amount of power needed for brain calculations relative to what you see happening in all these data centers. So that has to factor in as well, and the rising cost of energy. So if you're saying that the cost is not being reflected in the pricing, imagine as cost for energy, which is the limiting factor of AI, what will it be in the future? So that'll be a big decision point. Is it cheaper to hire a human or to, you know, have a AI-based robot do the work?
Yeah. And speaking of that, what's left out of a lot of this sort of, hyperbole, kind of propaganda about how great AI and robots are, is the maintenance. And so, like, the software engineers are saying, well, wait a minute, you let AI, do the coding, and then that looks nice up front. but then the maintenance of the system they've created will eat you alive because it's not that clean, and you don't understand what they've done. And so then, you know, to maintain this kind of polyglot system that's been created, it will add costs down the road. So in other words, it looks great in the first 10 minutes, and then a year from now, the maintenance costs are eating you alive. And so, and the same is true of robots. Everybody is in love with some robot doing kung fu or whatever. But what's hidden is that there was an immense amount of tedious, time-consuming, super expensive training to program the robot to do that stuff. And then robots are machines, and machines break down. And they're immensely complicated machines with complicated software. So the idea that you just buy a robot for $30,000 and then it's all like, oh, and it's going to work perfectly for years or decades at no cost. And it's all like, we can't even build a refrigerator that lasts 3 years. And that's a super simple machine. So now you're telling me that robots are going to be cost-free. And it's all like, that's not realistic. I'm sorry. So, and we don't know what the cost will be, but we know that they will be a lot higher than zero. So there's that. What is the lifetime cost of this? And so when, in your analysis, you covered some of that about looking at the overall cost of humans versus robots.
Meet the Cedar Owl, a new economics and finance publication with a focus on environmentalism. We combine the Austrian School of Economics and market environmentalism principles for investing in a sustainable future. Follow the link in the description to get to know the Cedar Owl better, understand our values, our mission, exactly where we're coming from, and the type of content that we release on a cyclical basis every Thursday. Join us in targeting outperforming portfolio returns while making a positive impact on society and the environment through technology. Subscribe now for weekly insights, investment articles, and exclusive content.
Yeah, let me just share my screen on that. Yeah, so we've done some research and published a Substack article on it, AI robot versus human worker, total cost of ownership. So we go through all that, the full total cost breakdown with lots of charts and data points analysis. And we eventually come up to this point. I want to get to a chart to show here, this chart here, which we think can serve as a guidepost to does it make sense or not from all different aspects, total cost of ownership. So this chart can be used as a guiding post for organizations where the left column is the decision factor, like does it involve a lot of task repetitiveness or scale of deployment? Okay, yes, AI makes sense in those, but what about if there's some type of stakeholder relationships or regulatory sensitivity, vendor dependency, risks, those type of things? Then we think a human is better off overall looking at it. So yeah, this chart can be used for a guiding post.
Yeah, and what I like about your scheme here is that it's practical, and what there are limits on what AI and robots can do, and nobody talks about those because that's not the propaganda or promotion that's going to people buy into it, right? And then somebody's going to benefit from us buying into their kind of promotion. But the reality is these issues have been around since AI really became a factor in like the early 80s, right? And so like one limit is AI is actually not intelligent. It's just a probability distribution. So it's actually mimicking or intelligence, if you will. It's not actually intelligent, right? It's kind of using tricks, if you will, to kind of mimic our intelligence. So that's an inherent limit. And so when people say, oh, AI is going to get better, and it's all like, well, actually, no, because it actually is not modeling intelligence. It's modeling sort of like mimicry. And so And that is not mimicking something is not recreating what you're mimicking. So there's that limit. And then in terms of like, where is it going? Then we have to ask ourselves, is it the grand scheme of this is this? The whole idea of AI being a wonderful thing is basically this. Just as the Industrial Revolution commoditized manual labor, AI is going to commoditize cognitive work, right? On a vast scale. And what I, as I just explained, if the core technology here is probability distribution, that's not intelligence on the scale of the human mind, which is uses intuitive and rational mechanisms. You know, the human mind has a lot of different levels. And if you study how we actually think and reach decisions and so on, then you realize that just having a probability distribution is not going to replace human cognition, right? It can replace the lowest kind of hanging fruit, as your chart described, but it can't do the full scale of cognition with the current level of modeling. Never mind the speed of the chips; it's the models are primitive. So we can kind of nail down the core limits of AI in terms of commoditizing cognition. It isn't going to happen. So there's that, and then we can say, so what is AI good at? Well, it's good at several things, Richard, as you know. One is malicious uses, ransomware, spoofing, hacking. I mean, all of these malicious uses are exploding and there's no way to control them. And people, if you talk to like the highest levels of AI in the government, this is sobering or terrifying to them because there's no way to control it. So my analogy is the positive aspects of AI are like a 1 meter wave coming in on a nice, beautiful beach. Oh, look how nice that wave is. Meanwhile, the malicious and perverse consequences are a 10 meter tsunami that's coming very fast right after the little tiny wave of progress. So anti-progress is maybe the real problem with AI, not just its own limits, but what it's unleashed can't be controlled in terms of malicious or perverse uses. So there's that. And then we have to talk about what AI is good at, which is surveillance and data collection. So in other words, it's perfect for like what I call privatized totalitarian state, where, you know, the private industry is a totalitarian structure that it is melded with the state in terms of like social engineering. So, you know, so the private companies collect the data and then they share it with the state. And then pretty soon you've got a social engineering structure that's being sold as some kind of wonderful productivity tool, but it's actually just a tool of control.
Mm-hmm. And you've also written, if you can see the screen, this Substack article, Rowboats in the Stormy Seas of AI. Can you elaborate on that? Because cannot fix what's broken.
Yeah, I think what I was trying to describe here is that if we're all in a little rowboat and you only want to focus on your rowboat, like say you have some small business or enterprise, maybe AI tools can help you. Maybe they will. There's some way to automate some sort of, you know, workflow for you and your little robot. But if you look at the sea around you, look at the ocean, then you realize AI is not going to be a solution for everybody and everything. And so if you're going to talk about AI being useful in your robot, maybe, but maybe not. And in terms of the sea that AI is supposed to be changing all for the good, it's actually sort of poisoning the sea around us if we look at it.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to do a summary of the three types of camps that you see AI playing a role in or perhaps evolving, could you summarize those camps that you sort of referenced it, alluded it a bit earlier, but just to detail in more elaboration?
Yeah. And then I'm interested in your feedback. I think the one camp is the skeptics, which I include myself in because I've been kind of a close observer of AI for literally 40 some years, because there was, I've seen these waves, and everybody that's been in the business for a while knows that there's these waves of enthusiasm. And like in the early 80s, there was waves of AI enthusiasm with heuristics and this and that. And so, and then all those high expectations fail to deliver, and then everybody's disgusted, and then AI goes into a froth. And then there's another wave of enthusiasm. So we're in the current wave of enthusiasm. But as I kind of pointed out, there are structural and model and practical, you know, limits on AI that are currently being kind of underplayed in the sort of financial rush of this sort of gold rush kind of mentality, where, you know, everybody's trying to suck in people into AI to skim off basically speculative profits from the enthusiasm. So there's the skeptics camps, and then there's the camp that sees this as structures of control, you know, the surveillance, the data collection, the melding of private corporations and private totalitarianism with public totalitarianism, that these are hand in glove, and we're being sold a system that's actually about social control as some sort of, like, you know, freeing, wonderful thing that's going to increase productivity and free us all from work and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of like a con job for the underlying use of AI. And then the third camp is the AI supremacy, you know, that AI is going to fix all these problems that I've mentioned, because it's improving so fast that we can't keep track of it. And it's going to fulfill all those utopian views and promises. So those are the three camps in general that you'll find people kind of finding, with some overlap, obviously. But so I think you fall into the camp of skepticism based on just cost and the two models, software and hardware.
Yeah. And so, because what happened, I think there's a good analogy with the dot-com boom that, internet and IP is going to be everywhere. We're going to have IP of everything, and dishwashers and coffee machines and all that. And that never really happened to any significant extent as was initially anticipated. You know, back in 2000, 2001, that was the what everybody was talking about. Similar as well on the financial markets, where you have elevated equity prices, elevated price earnings multiples, which did not play over a 1 year period, but have played over a 20, 25 year period, right? The money eventually came, but over a long drawn out period of time. So I think a good analogy is there. Technology can be used for good or bad. So I think, yeah, your first camp of this whole control system, leveraging AI for digital IDs and control, I think that will be likely leveraged by especially indebted governments, G7 in particular, to control population movements, physical movements, financial movements, that type of thing. Where there's less problems on government debt, you know, and the BRICS plus or Global South, that it'll be more of a leverage on the good side, where how can we use AI to enhance productivity, you know, instead of just worrying about taking away jobs. So I think there's a positive aspect to it. That yes, in many of those applications, that chart that I just showed, you can leverage AI to help economic productivity of the economy, of organizations, of your own company. Those are just some of my thoughts. But yeah, I agree, those three camps that you've identified.
Yeah, so I want to extend what you just said about whether it's good or bad usage. And so I think if we go back to the foundations of free markets, then we find that, you know, as Adam Smith highlighted, you know, you can talk about the profit and the productivity and like the wealth of nations, a comparative advantage and all those kinds of things. But those all rest on a moral foundation, which Adam Smith wrote another book about. And so we take our, in the process of looking at capitalism or free markets or democracy and liberty, we take our moral foundation for granted. We don't really look at it, but it's eroded. It's we have tremendous loss of moral foundations. We live in an era of complete moral rot. And this can be summarized as what's moral is what's legal, and what's legal is for sale. And if we think about that, what we're saying is we don't have a moral foundation. Like AI, the AI companies have basically ripped off all of us copyright holders. Which is another sort of sore point. And, you know, some of the big media companies are suing. And so the Supreme Court says, oh, well, that's not actually, that's fair use because they're kind of doing something different with your copyrighted material. And it's like, no, they're making money with our copyrighted material. That's not different. But it's considered legal. And so therefore, it's considered moral. But it's actually wrong. Because you know what? The copyright law in the United States is extremely clear. You create a video, a soundtrack, a written document, it's copyrighted the second you're done. And so they've this all this scraping of the entire internet includes a huge amount of copyrighted material that we're not getting paid for. So that's an example of what I'm saying is the moral rot that AI is exploiting, because it just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. And so that's where this idea of social engineering is so dangerous, is we're told it's legal that all of our data is collected and sold to generate hundreds of billions of dollars. And, the surveillance is shared with the government because that's legal. And, all this stuff is legal, but is it right? Is it morally right? And the answer in many cases is no, it's not right. And yet we've lost our ability to make that kind of judgment or say that there are moral rights that are not, it's unacceptable to us to have everything just reduced to, is it legal? Because the problem with being legal is what's legal is for sale. Because if you buy a political class for $10 million, they will insert a tax break for you that's worth $100 million in some 1,000-page bill. So this is where AI is sort of the spearhead of our moral decline, because if what's legal is moral and what's legal is for sale, then you end up where we are now, where AI is controlled by a handful of firms. So I think, kind of to end, the positive aspect of AI that I see is if you can download a software that you own and control, and it's not connected to any data center, it's not, you're processing the AI on your CPU in your laptop, that, and it's using your data from your enterprise or interest, then I see that has potential, right? Because you own it, you control it, and it's using your data. And it's not, you're not having to buy tokens from anybody. That, I think, has potential. And you're not ripping us off, all of us who created the copyright content that the big AI companies have basically stolen. You're not drawing upon that so much. You're applying AI to your own data. That I think has potential in terms of the robots. The sea is being poisoned, but in our own little robots, yeah, sure. If we can download AI software and use our resources, then that has potential. But beyond that, we're looking at what's being dumped in the ocean, and it doesn't look like it's going to be a positive outcome in terms of AI as a whole.
Mm. Well, that's great insight and perspective, on what is happening and what is likely to happen, taking it from multidisciplinary ideas and approach. Wow, great discussion, Charles, as always. And how can our listeners and viewers learn more about your work?
Please visit me at Substack, charleshughsmith.com. And I recommend everyone read Richard's research on these vital topics, because it's not just opinion. They've constructed some a serious sort of structure for analyzing whether AI is really going to pay off and and whether it won't. So thank you very much, Richard.
Yeah, thank you, Charles. Yeah, our Substack, cedarowl.substack.com. And yours is charleshughsmith.substack.com. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.